This is Shine On Policycast, the podcast that brings you EU policy updates relevant to solar. I'm your host, Bethany. Let's get started. Welcome back to Shine On Policycast election season. Today we're joined by Thomas, our R&I manager here at Solar Power Europe. So welcome, Thomas. Thanks for joining.
Thank you, Bethany.
For those not watching but listening, holding up our wonderful Solar for Europe manifesto. You can find that on the Solar Power Europe website. But the EU elections are drawing closer, where it's at this point, you know, a month or so away. And as we're getting closer, politicians are focusing on issues critical to Europe's economic future and energy security. And in our manifesto, we cover everything that they need to think about from our perspective as they prepare for their elections. But what role does research and innovation have to play in the whole story? Let's get into it today. And before we get started on the questions, this season Policycast, we're inviting our guests to bring on a prop, and then I have to guess what they have to do with what we're about to talk about today. So I see Thomas has brought a prop, and I show it to the camera, describe it for the listeners at home, because...
So, yeah, people on the camera might, if they're French especially, or Belgian, recognize it very quickly. Others might have a bit more challenges. So it's a little plastic figurine of a comic book character making coffee with a radiator. This character wears a green jumper, blue trousers, and espadrille. Those who know the character might already have recognized, it's Gaston Lagaffe making coffee with his radiators, a very well-known comic book inventor, often, unfortunately, inventing very useless things.
Well, then I can make a good stab at how that connects to what we're going to talk about, because presumably we want to invent useful things, so less making coffee from radiators and more getting more solar energy from a solar panel.
Yeah, I would say that's a good trend to follow. I think we might still want to emulate the rethinking attitude of Gaston Lagaffe, always a great inspiration to think out of the box and disrupt essentially the office where he works. And in our case, the European energy system.
Oh, thanks so much for bringing it into my not being French or Belgian, I've never seen this comic before, so I'm thrilled to see it in person. But then to kick off about why research and innovation is so important, why is it relevant, how does it impact the energy transition, why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I mean, essentially when you look at the energy transition at kind of a high level, 20 years ago, it would have been very hard to conceive where we are today. And that's really to a large extent thanks to innovation. And it's probably truer than anywhere else in PV, where we have a very fast-paced technology. Mm. We essentially change to, let's say, dominating technology of on the market almost every 5 years. Modules today are not the same at all than modules 10 years ago. That drove really the first wave of installation in Europe. So we have more efficient, more reliable, hopefully, more resource efficient as well, much, much cheaper modules. And this is to a large extent due to obviously industrialization and the sector growing, but innovation is really at the heart of it, bringing new solutions, new processes, and new technologies to really deliver ever higher targets and deployment rate that can never be captured by economic system modeling. So,
so bigger, better, faster. That's the role of innovation.
And stronger, obviously.
And stronger. So how will the solar of tomorrow be different from today? What are we aiming for?
Yeah, so today, when you think PV, mostly you have, you know, the blue and silver kind of rectangle in mind. Mm-hmm. But more and more, thanks to innovation, we're able to have different colors of modules. And I mean, if you want to think a bit crazy, for people with minimum physics notion, there's white modules that exist.
Reflect.
And yeah, so colors are going to be evolving, mm-hmm. but also shape and applications. Mm-hmm. We already have quite a few applications of PV integrated in buildings, so mm-hmm. becoming components of buildings like facades or even windows can have transparent PV mm-hmm. in theory.
No.
It's not very mainstream so far, but it will happen. And then there's also integration of PV in other areas. We can make PV float on water in the mm-hmm. sea, for instance, putting it between offshore wind turbines to have a really an optimal use of electricity infrastructure, or even putting it on hydro reservoir lakes to prevent water loss, especially as we have a warmer climate. And then obviously there's more and more applications like using PV for agriculture. Mm-hmm. It's being used, for instance, in the Bordeaux region to maintain the quality of the wine as a reaction to climate change, for instance. But you also have broader applications because it's a way to optimize agricultural land use and retain moisture in the land, for instance. And yeah, we also see some more, let's say, emerging application, but with a nice potential, and also that make very nice pictures, like solar cars,
oh, yeah.
Solar planes potentially, etc., etc. So really, we're going to move from one single technology that you need to put somewhere and then connect to a grid to a much different approach to basically using solar to power equipment, devices, or different uses.
Yeah, integrated in everything. The sky's the limit with the flexibility of solar. So then in Europe, what does that mean? I mean, what's the current landscape for solar R&I in Europe? How does that compare to the rest of the world?
Yeah, so Europe has a very interesting landscape for research innovation because it's really one of the leading still areas for research, especially. So when we talk research innovation, we can somewhat distinguish between research, what's kind of really in the lab, white coats, experimenting and so on. And then innovation is more, how do you take this lab product and how do you put that on the market?
Yeah,
in Europe, we have this very, very good network of research institutes. We can obviously mention Fraunhofer. In France, CEA is also a very important one. URAC in Italy, CNR. In Belgium, we have IMEC, TNO in the Netherlands, etc. So a lot of dedicated research institutes that have this role of trying to bridge research and innovation, very dynamic universities as well, and obviously a good funding program for research with Horizon Europe, etc., that creates a good emulation.
Mm-hmm.
And where we're still able to develop innovative technologies that today are still the most promising ones in PV, things like TOPCon, heterojunction. So essentially the PV techs of tomorrow, or even the rapidly growing PV techs of today, they hold to a degree, have some European research in them, where the picture needs to improve is on the innovation part. Mm. So we don't necessarily have all the industrial players or the economic environment to allow this lab breakthrough
to
become basically a product.
So then, I mean, that brings me nicely to my next question. If we look at the, you know, moving into a new European mandate and new MEPs, what are some of the challenges and then the opportunities that you know, these new policymakers and decision makers need to drill into to kind of monopolize on this industrial, well, innovation and research base that we have already?
Yeah, that's
the big question.
The big question. No, I mean, I think kind of the bottom line of it is, until now we've had this very fragmented approach to innovation, especially in PV, like throwing a bit of money on, you know, making market studies to understand how you can transition from lab to market. But what we need is scale.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what PV needs now, because it's not anymore this niche, almost garage technology from 20, 30 years ago. It's really a huge major industry with gigantic factories at gigawatt scale. And that's the kind of things we need now to be able to be competitive in bringing new products, because we need to have the speed and to have the capacity to rapidly test them at large scale and to understand what works, or to operationalize things quickly. And that's what so far is missing and what we are working on. And obviously what has been well identified also by the European institution, national authorities. Now we need to find the solution to crack the code, essentially.
And then if we drill into that even further, I mean, looking at what politicians can do, looking at what MEPs can do, does that look like, Horizon funding is moving into its new chapter? And, you know, what does the funding landscape look like there? What more could be done there? And what really can they do once they get through elections and find their seat again?
Yeah, so the European Parliament, it plays a very important role in shaping the Horizon framework. There's regular updates of the Horizon regulation, and the European Parliament really is a strong actor in shaping where the money goes, how much money might go into it. So that's a very important, let's say, aspect of it. Horizon Europe is one of the most successful programs globally for research and innovation, not just for PV, but for anything. And there, really, the European Parliament can play a role in making sure, first, that we don't squeeze your European research innovation budgets, mm-hmm. and ideally that we expand them. And then building from that, the European Parliament also has this role in putting new topics on the table and bringing new ideas to the European Commission and to sometimes more conservative, let's say, European Council. And this progressive force can be really good in, for instance, adapting the way we use existing programs, maybe twisting new programs to make sure that they are ready for tomorrow's challenge. And that notably includes having a robust and innovative PV sector across its value chain.
I'm convinced, obviously being here and on Solar Policy Cast, that makes a lot of sense to me. And then I think, when we talk to politicians, how do we convince them that, R&I is really worth banking on? Is it jobs? Is it security? I mean, what's the sort of the pull factors there that you're levering?
I mean, it's kind of everything.
R&I is everything.
So, really, when you look at research innovation, for instance, taking a lot of the challenges from PV, but first one being cost. Now, obviously, PV is very competitive and affordable technology, but that's largely due to innovation, improving the amount of electricity you can produce with the same size solar panel, improving the amount of electricity you can produce with the same materials, and two very significant factors of improvement. Even though we are not necessarily, manufacturing all of our PV or even most of our PV in Europe, thanks to innovation, notably European innovation, the PV technology matured enough that we basically were able to save over 120 billion euros compared to if we would have had to import the same amount of modules, but at the cost of, let's say, 10 years ago. Okay. So that's a very significant saving. And that's a saving that's going to balloon, essentially, as we continue improving on performance, on cost, and as essentially the market grows as well and we import ever more PV and we need ever more of it to ensure the reliability of energy system. And then the second aspect is more and more we are seeing that people are concerned about material use in clean energy technologies, about the circularity of our economy overall. And for PV, this notably goes via innovation, because it's obviously challenging to make sure we have the right quality of materials to deliver this very complex product that is a PV panel. And with innovation, we can basically use waste from PV modules and essentially have usable materials down the line for making new ones and maybe even better ones than the previous ones.
Okay. So, if I'm a politician and I'm listening, then invest in R&I because you'll save 120 billion in the solar you're going to use down the line. And then have better access to recycled materials, basically. Yeah. So then back to EU elections. They're coming up on the 6th to the 9th of June. Do you know what day it is in your home country of France? And why would you encourage people to go and vote in elections?
Yeah, so I think in France, like every election, it is on the Sunday, and that is the 9th of June. I mean, beyond some obvious reasons why people should go voting, and let's say more broader ones, if we look specifically at people interested in the energy transition and in PV, it's important to vote for parties or MEPs that have a very strong vision on what they want to achieve, and that also ideally have a proven track record of being able to push this agenda at the European level. If we look at France, election culture is very different from the European election culture, and especially the way the French parliament works, very different from the European one. And it's also good to understand that European elections require, I mean, European parliament requires compromise, and basically every step counts. So every MEP is going to have an impact on basically shaping the agenda, and you don't need to have the majority to change basically the way the EU is going to move, because there's a better representation of all the voices, essentially.
Oh, great. So your vote always matters and your MEP always matters. So be there on the 9th of June in France casting your ballot. Thanks so much, Thomas, for joining us on PolicyCast, and hope to see you again. Thanks for listening to today's episode. This podcast is brought to you by Solar Power Europe. If you don't want to miss our next episode, make sure to subscribe and turn on notifications. Shine on.